It doesn't, really. It's situational. It's the moment. The minute the war's over, everybody's... What's in it for me again? I mean, there's a much more turning away from the kind of... these kind of spiritual changes or changes in mass consciousness or changes... I feel that most of the predictions we make are based on inertia, on nothing's going to happen, really. It's just going to go more and more and more. And I don't experience that. I experience that there are critical points in change where you can protest one day and a month later you can do the same protest and it's heard entirely differently by a whole culture because of like a Three Mile Island event or something like that, by any kind of natural phenomenon or unnatural phenomenon that might occur. So I don't rule out at all the possibility. I don't rule out the basic survival of the spirit of humankind. And I think that Poland is a mixed example at this moment. It's got a little bit of it in it. We can feel it in the Solidarity Movement, a certain screaming of pain of a group of people about the imposition. And that message is being, it's affecting all of our hearts in a certain way. That's changing the nature of the way everybody listens to your message each time. And in a way, I'm feeling the collectivity of consciousness that's involved in the world. And I watch these shifts that occur at critical moments of mass shifts, mass consciousness shifts, like movements of ice flow. And I really perhaps see that the leaders are the followers. They're not the leaders. They follow. And that you lead. And they follow, and we get caught in them leading and thinking we've got to get to them because they're the source of power, but they're very reactive. The whole system of a bureaucratic scene is so reactive. And then what are they reactive to? They're reactive finally to the individual, when I come back to the individual human heart or the individual consciousness.
I find, as I listen to you, that whereas your training and discipline and path have always been, lead you, I think, every time, look at the collectivity.
Yeah.
And the whole process and so forth, which is certainly important. One has to have this dual vision somehow. I hear myself making distinctions that seem important to me. Not dualisms in the sense of fundamental dichotomies that are impermanent by no means, but distinctions that I think a certain degree of us and them, and let me explain that. Not in the, and here I learned a great deal from Gandhi, I think, to reject the notion of enemy in the sense of someone who may be or must be destroyed.
Yeah.
And who is permanently wrong or sinful or
adversarial. Well, exactly right. Yeah.
Being that can change.
Yeah.
But in terms of whether some people have different roles and are adversaries, if not enemies, let me answer the question you posed a little earlier in possibly a little different answer than you implied. Who do we focus on? I don't answer this a priori, but at this point, I find my hope in people other than the ones who are in power.
Yes.
And in their potential for change.
I understand,
Without saying that there is a potential.
No, I agree.
And I'll just say, when I have these dialogues with people, which doesn't happen very often, in part it's almost for personal reasons, or it's for minor tactical reasons. It's not because I believe that a lot of hope lies in converting those people.
Because they're locked into a system, too.
What has selected them there, yes. But now, if the mass of the public were effectively the same in values, even though they're not in the same positions, I wouldn't know where to stand, where the leverage would come.
Yeah.
I could still hope for mass conversion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be as hopeful as I actually am. Here's what the information that I just told you tells me. We've already said a group of leadership elites, not just military by any chance, definitely led by civilians who do know at the top, Churchill in World War II, the president since then. Not all their assistants, but the man at the top. They have convinced themselves that not just the Sermon on the Mount is to be rejected, not just that Jesus was wrong, ironically, everybody but a pacifist, practically, is saying that, whether they realize it or not, to some extent. They're saying the just war theory is obsolete. The just war theory is a way of justifying war by asserting and maintaining limits on violence in a given situation. Mm-hmm. And these are people now who've said no limits are appropriate.
Yeah.
Any amount of violence. There really is no limit. And with that in mind, they leaped very quickly from the threshold of the tens of millions dead of the 50s to the hundreds of millions of the 60s. And if they noticed it at all, it didn't stop them. Whatever is necessary to threaten
whatever
chaos.
Is necessary. Buy the players, do whatever you need to win
that's
the game.
There, if
that's
just
what we tell
war religion,
football coaches.
If just war theory is a kind of religion, and the gospel is perhaps another distinguishing kind of religion, pre-Constantinian.
This is another kind of religion.
This is another religion.
Sure,
and
exactly.
The religion
win
is
overall.
It's not Christian, for sure.
No.
Because with all of Christian's hypocrisy and concessions and compromising, it did maintain this particular ideal, and they have rejected that. That's not part of their ideals at that point anymore. So they do have a different religion. In that they're very dangerous. And of course, it's not just Americans.
But they're very reactive, too. No. They are not free players.
No, they're not free.
They are very reactive.
They are very powerful. They are disproportionately powerful to their numbers by an enormous amount. They are not all powerful.
No, they are not all powerful.
They're not even as powerful as they think.
No, in fact, they aren't that powerful at all, I don't think.
Okay, but now...
I think they're just part of a system that we are feeding all the time.
Well, say the public at large has power, which I believe, and the ending of the Vietnam War showed it.
Yes, absolutely.
But say they basically agreed with these people, had the same religion.
They basically do.
Where would we go?
At the moment.
What?
They seem to.
No, I think not. And that's where I put my hope at the moment.
So what you're doing is sort of spelling out what religion we are functioning under in the hopes that people will say, hey, I don't want to be part of this religion.
My hope, and I have hope.
A belief system and a myth.
My hope is presently based on the fact that the values... the restraints, the sense of purpose and who we are and what we are allowed to do and who we are serving and what, you know, what our identity is and who are our family, all these basic feelings. While they obviously have been greatly influenced by nationalism in this country and other countries, have not, I think, indoctrinated the mass of people in this country to an acceptance of massacre as a tool of policy. Me lie on a scale of 1,000. As the way we fight wars.
You know,
I think that they have...
Dan, before you get too optimistic, I use the football image.
Yeah.
Look at the increasing number of examples in which football coaches justify really horrendous moral breaches. University presidents justify their coaches justifying it for winning. And I wonder whether or not our upshot of our frontier mentality... and isn't really winning overall. That doesn't have any space. I mean, I'm sure maybe we are overestimating the disparity between those leaders and the mass of the people at their unconscious level of wanting to win and wanting to preserve their space.
First of all, my perception on this is not shared by all people or maybe most people, and not by all that I work with. And I'm often being told, I am, as you just said, I'm naive or something. It is my belief, actually. There is some evidence for it. Notice that the facts, let's just stipulate or accept for a discussion that the facts I've told you, I've asserted, are true.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
they are, actually, but that's my word. You don't have to believe it. You didn't know them, most of them, did you?
No.
Well, you're not any different from any other
man. No, I understand. Now the question is, what is knowledge to the mass of people?
No, I'm saying, why didn't you know them? I guarantee you some of them were hard to find out because they were secret. They were kept secret. Why was it necessary to keep them secret? Why is the nature of our planning, why is the reliance on threat secret?
Because our public moral stance is different than our private moral stance. And the government we hire to hold on to our private moral stance, but we don't want to make it all too public.
Right. You might be right. Yeah. That is a possible answer. That could explain the secrecy.
It's a conspiracy among all of us.
They're protecting us from this.
Do what you got to do, but don't tell us too much because we're not going to stand for it publicly.
We would rather not know. That's possible.